97.5 The Fanatic.
Does a great job covering the Eagles for NJ.com, and he joins us now on a Comcast business hotline, Beyond Fast. What's up, Mike?
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing good, man. So I put this out there earlier to the listeners, to the callers, in a form of a Twitter poll question. Do you think the Eagles can win a division and win a playoff game, win a division, win more than a playoff game, win a division only, or not make the playoffs at all? So I'll pose that to you as the first question. What do you think this team, I know it's early, it's only seven games into the season, but what do you see out of this Philadelphia Eagles football team?
Well, I think they're going to win the division. I think if you're watching Dallas, Washington right now, those two teams have a lot of issues on defense. Their offenses are out of sync as well. Carson Wentz is by far the best quarterback in this division right now. And, you know, if the Eagles can build off the momentum of beating the Giants and coming back and handling their business, I think they're set up in really good shape to take the division. You know, they have two more consecutive games against the NFC East. They play the Cowboys next week at home. Then they're on bye. Then they play the Giants again, who they've defeated eight straight times. And then they go to Cleveland, where it looks like Odell Beckham Jr. has a knee injury. And so depending on how banged up the Browns are, you know, that's, you know, advantageous for them because the Browns have gotten off to a pretty decent start. If the Eagles can win four straight games, they'll not only be in the thick of they'll not only run away with the division, but they'll build some confidence heading into a second half of the season that is full of a gauntlet of really good teams. And frankly, because the division's so bad, they don't really need to clear most of those matchups in order to win the division.
Mike, I had a scenario I put out last week where the Eagles only win division games the rest of the way and go 0-5 in the other non-division games and win the NFC East at 6-9-1. Now, nobody wants to see that. That would be ugly. But I'm starting to think that they can do better than that. I completely believe they should win the remaining NFC East games. And they're not going to be easy. They're going to be ugly. I don't care how beat up and banged up teams are. They're division games, rivalry games. But they should win those. And if they do, that gets them the six wins. And now if they can go 2-3 against Cleveland, Arizona, Seattle, Green Bay, New Orleans, now you got a winning record. Now you go in at 8-7-1. If you go 1-4, well, you go in at 7-8-1. You just laid out a scenario where they could possibly beat the Cleveland Browns. What is the biggest positive that you took out of Thursday night's comeback win over the Giants?
They're still fighting. I mean, this is a team that just doesn't give up. And mm-hmm. You can say what you want about Doug Peterson's play calling in the game. But frankly, his team wants to play for him. They're playing when you hear all these whispers, the Cowboys already getting frustrated over their coaching staff when they just got there. Washington doesn't have any stability at the quarterback position. And the Giants are a mess. So I think when you look at that, the Eagles, my former beat reporter partner, Zach Rosenblatt, now covers the Giants. We just did a breakdown before the game of who's set up better for the future between the Giants and the Eagles. Even with the Eagles' cap issues, they're so much more significantly set up for the future and future runs to bounce back than the Giants are. I believe they are in better shape than Washington is as well. So I just think when you look at this group overall, they have a nice young nucleus with some aging guys, and they're winning with the young nucleus because a lot of the aging guys are out of the building.
I look at, you know, all the gloom and doom forecasts for the future and the salary cap issues, and I say, hold on. You got a quarterback who has proven last year with very limited talent around him, the past 3 weeks with very limited talent around him, that he's a baller. Say what you want about Carson Wentz, he's a baller. Now, you add to the mix Jalen Reagor coming back, John Hightower proving that he's got the speed to at least get open. I would like to see him catch more of those passes when he's wide open. But you got the emergence of Travis Fulgham. You have Dallas Goedert hopefully coming back from this injury, and I'm not sure that Zach Ertz is in their long-term plans, but at least for this year, it is a significant injury. I'm not sure what you can count on with him. I can't count on DeSean Jackson at all. I think Alshon is going to try to come back at least, and I don't know if you're going to get Miami Alshon or if you're going to get a different kind of Alshon, but if he gives you anything close to what he did last year in Miami, with Miles Sanders coming back, what Boston Scott can do occasionally, not all the time, you can't count him on count on him continually, and some of the guys on the offensive line, like Jordan Mailata emerging, is maybe more talented than I, certainly more than I thought he was. Mike, I didn't think he was going to be anything. Yeah, there is potential for hope there beyond all of those scenarios. When you look at this, you said a young nucleus with some aging talent, so you don't really think that this is a team that's on the decline necessarily because of what you're seeing from the young guys?
Well, I think the two biggest stories of the season are undoubtedly Travis Fulgham's emergence and Jordan Mailata's emergence. You know, there's still a lot of question marks surrounding Andre Dillard, but you know, Jordan Mailata can at least do the job, and at worst case scenario, he's your swing tackle for the next season, or you can re-sign him on the cheap because you're the one that gave him his shot. I think, you know, they're at this point where they're winning with these young guys. Travis Fulgham looks like the X receiver of the future. I mean, there's literally no way you can think this guy is a fluke at this point. Through four games, he already has more receiving yards and as many receiving touchdowns as Odell Beckham Jr. I mean, it's pretty incredible what he's been able to do. He's got three straight games of 70 yards or more. He's three of his four games, he scored a touchdown. And you know what? Carson Wentz is feeling really comfortable with him. The last three games of the season, he's targeted him over 10 times. So that tells you what he thinks of him. That tells you what Doug Peterson's game planning thinks about him. And he's become quite the find. And I think when you look at that and you look at kind of the role players who are stepping up, you brought up John Hightower. He's been able to get open with regularity. I think, you know, Greg Ward, low-key, I think, had the best game of his career against the Giants. I know a lot of people are going to talk about the game-winning touchdown against Washington, but he made several clutch catches against the Giants and had a very impressive touchdown catch. Look, I think guys are stepping up and they're doing what they can, and that's important. That's what they need to do, and that's why I'm not really big in favor of a lot of the older guys returning, a guy like Jason Peters, a guy like Alshon Jeffrey, because you're seeing what you have in everyone else right now.
Well, that's going to be a big decision that the Eagles make, because Jason Peters is closer to returning, and I don't know how you can put him in at left tackle over Jordan Mailata now, but knowing how this team reveres, this organization reveres Jason Peters, he's a future Hall of Famer. They look at him in the highest regard. Could they really allow him to come back and put him on a bench or ask him to move to right guard? I don't anticipate that. I don't think it's the right move, but I think when he comes back, they're going to try and put him in at left tackle. How do you see that playing out?
Well, I think it depends on how Lane Johnson's injury is. Maybe you move Mailata to right tackle and you've got the built-in excuse. But yeah, I mean, at this point, you know Jason Peters isn't going to be back. You also have won without him in the past. 2017, they won without him. So I think when you're looking at this and you're weighing everything, the next couple of games are really big, because if they beat the Cowboys with Jordan Mailata, and Jordan Mailata has a good performance, he stumbled a little bit in this past game against the Giants, it's going to be a huge decision, because you don't want to step back his progress, because the only way he's going to get better is with more playing time. And Jason Peters is obviously not going to be here next year, so you have to make the decision not only for right now, but for the future. And if you're Howie Roseman, you know, you found a guy who costs nothing, who can continue to get better. Why dictate putting Jason Peters out there?
And I don't know that it would be an easy move for Mailata if Lane Johnson is out to put Peters in at left tackle and move him over to right tackle. We've seen, you know, that's a difficult transition to make.
Sure.
And he's played both spots. We're talking to Mike Kay, who covers the Eagles for NJ.com, also co-hosted the No Huddle Show. And you can follow him on Twitter at Mike_E_K. K-K-A-Y-E. Mike, you mentioned the receivers and obviously the emergence in season of Travis Fulgham, Greg Ward and how he's playing, John Hightower. How much credit should we give receivers coach Aaron Moorhead for the development of these young guys? Because the Eagles have had a lot of change at that wide receiver coaching spot, and you know what, to even a lesser degree, J-Jaw had a big catch the other day on third and eight, third and nine, whatever it was. All he does is catch first downs. Of course, it was only catch of the game, but how much credit do you give Aaron Moorhead?
A ton. You know, he's a guy who played in the league. He was the fourth wide receiver for the Colts when they won their Super Bowl with Peyton Manning. He played with Reggie Wayne. He played with Marvin Harrison, and those guys respect him. I spoke to Clyde Christensen, his old offensive coordinator, who's now the quarterback's coach in Tampa Bay. He adores him. The guy's a really smart guy. He's developed a lot of guys in college who have now gone on to the pros and played pretty well. You look at a guy like Christian Kirk, a guy like Josh Reynolds. Those guys have developed under him, and he's got quite the resume from a college coaching standpoint. Now you look at what he's been able to do for the Eagles. All those guys are playing multiple positions. He's a very big believer in playing all three positions, the slot, the Z, the X. And if you watch Travis Fulgham throughout the game, you'll see him line up everywhere. You'll see John Hightower line up everywhere. Jalen Reagor, when he comes in back, will line up everywhere. Greg Ward's lined up outside the slot a few times. So he's a big believer in making guys versatile, improving their blocking, but also improving their hands and their ability to look into the ball. And I think, for once, they have a guy who, you know, Mike Groh didn't get a lot of credit as an OC, but he was a very good wide receivers coach, and it was kind of like a flash in the pan because once he got promoted, they went through two really poor wide receivers coaches, at least from a performance standpoint. And I think Moorhead's a guy who can relate to his players because he's done it before, he's done it at that level, and they respect what he can bring to the table as a teacher.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
And given that, and given the depth they have at the position, and I know D-Jack is hurt and Alshon might be coming back, but they have a lot of numbers there to where Quez Watkins was a healthy scratch. As we move closer towards the trade deadline on Election Day, I don't see the Eagles making a play for a wide receiver at all. Especially also if you add in the fact that 2 years ago when they brought in Golden Tate, they had trouble integrating him into the offense. If I'm going to bring in a guy for the offense, I'd go familiarity and somebody who can help you get that tough yard. And that's Jordan Howard, who has been basically rendered to not doing anything in Miami. And he's still got three touchdowns on 14 carries and less than a yard average per carry. How do you see this team, as it approaches the trade deadline? I kind of feel like they could be sellers and buyers at the same time, but I don't anticipate anything major. What do you see, Mike?
You and I are on the same page. I know that's not great radio, but I've heard Jordan Howard is definitely on the trade block. You know, he only has $1.1 million left on his contract. That's around what the Eagles wanted to pay in the offseason for a veteran backup running back. And you could probably get him for a conditional seven. You know, yeah, the Eagles make the playoffs or what have you, because frankly, the Dolphins overpaid Howard by several million dollars. They probably just want to get him off the books, maybe get something for him. They know they're not going to get a compensatory pick for him because they're going to have to cut him after this year because he signed a 2-year deal. You might as well get some value. Maybe Howie Roseman can offer a 2022 seventh round pick so he doesn't have to touch these picks. You can easily cut him after next year because none of his salary is guaranteed. But he knows the offense. And I think that makes a lot of logistical sense. We've seen that Howie likes to bring back guys who know the system. They brought back Richard Rodgers when they needed the third tight end. They brought in T.Y. McGill, who had been here before. He likes reunions, so that makes sense. But when you bring up sellers, Howie Roseman's not really a seller by nature.
No.
During his two tenures as a GM, he's only traded one player without getting a player back, and that was Isaac Zboaga, the first year of the Chip Kelly era. So typically when he trades, it's a player-for-player deal. Look, Alshon Jeffrey is reportedly available. I know that the Packers have done their research on trying to trade for a wide receiver, so we'll see if that's maybe a destination. It makes sense. He fits that kind of Alan Lazard, big wide receiver sort of presence. And the Packers, you know, they're gearing up for a Super Bowl. Maybe they think that he could be a guy that can take them over the edge as an outside receiver, along with Davante Adams. But, yeah, as far as shipping guys out, you know, you look at the guys who would have the most appeal in the market, DeSean Jackson, Malik Jackson, Zach Ertz, they're all injured.
Yeah.
It's very unlikely that any of them get dealt. Obviously, Zach Ertz being on IR, he can't be dealt. So, yeah, I don't expect them to be super active, but I could see one or two deals either way.
I look at Alshon, and I think if the Packers were willing to take his salary on without the Eagles sweetening it by saying, here you go, take Alshon, the salary, and a third-round pick, I thought that's the only way to get a deal done is give them a pick and Alshon and take like a conditional seventh back or something. If Green Bay's on board, I'm pretty sure a lot of people will be lining up, Mike, to drive Alshon to Wisconsin if that were the case. Let me ask you about the linebacking situation, because obviously that's been an area of issue for the Eagles, and Nate Gary has been somebody who is a whipping boy of fans and sports talk radio. I thought Alex Singleton had a really nice game on Thursday, and I like what I saw out of him, and I want to see more. What is your take on the linebackers at this point?
Well, I completely agree with you. I think Alex Singleton has shown that he is a very competent linebacker, especially on the outside. You know, he's a former CFL Defensive Player of the Year. He had a rough game against Pittsburgh, but I thought he looked good against San Francisco. He looked good against the Ravens for the most part. And yeah, against the Giants, I thought he played very, very well, especially against the run. You know, they're going to get TJ Edwards back. I've been told that he is healthy and just awaiting his eligibility to return, which will be this week. And I think if you want to switch up the linebacker group, I think having, you know, Edwards at middle linebacker and Alex Singleton at outside linebacker in nickel package makes a lot of sense. Nate Gary has shown a bit of incompetence in that area. It'd be nice.
That's a nice way of putting it, Mike, and a little bit of incompetence.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think they've given Nathan Gary every opportunity
yes.
to show that he can be a dime linebacker, a nickel linebacker, and he just hasn't come up empty. And Jim Schwartz can blame anyone he wants, but frankly, Nate Gary just isn't that guy. If you want to have him as a base linebacker, terrific. I think that that makes sense. It's the third guy on the outside. But right now, I'm looking at TJ Edwards. I'm looking at Alex Singleton, and I think that's the group. I've seen reports that they've been looking into linebackers. Really, the only logical options would be on the Jets in Neville Hewitt or Avery Williamson, two guys who are in the final years of their deal. They're veterans. They can come in. They know how to play the middle linebacker position. They've got enough experience that they could settle in right away, and they're good in coverage. But other than that, I really don't see them making a big move for a linebacker.
What about Hassan Reddick? With the Cardinals, you hear his name mentioned a lot as a potential. And now the Cardinals obviously are a team that's in a playoff hunt. I'm not sure that would be a trade compatible partner. But is that somebody that you would think could be a guy that they eyeball not for now but for the future?
Well, he's an interesting guy, right? Because he's a former first round pick. He's in the final year of his deal, and he's a guy who they've actually used more as an edge rusher in their 3-4 defense this year. To me, he makes sense as a Sam linebacker. He's not a 2-down guy, in my opinion, but they have shown the urgency to blitz a little bit more. If you saw against the Giants, I think Schwartz blitzed more than he had in all season. If they want a guy who can kind of disguise the blitz, I guess Riddick could be a guy. I don't see it happening, but I could see them looking at him in the offseason if he's available.
All right, Mike, before you get out of here, I brought this up in the day after, and I asked Doug Peterson because I thought this season Carson Wentz is playing more like Brett Favre than ever before. He didn't have that gunslinger mentality. He only threw 7 picks in year 2, year 3, year 4. Obviously, he's 7 games in. He's thrown 10 picks. He's in year 5. We hear the whole year 5 crowd. Well, he's in year 5. You ought to know better. Peyton Manning threw 19 picks in year 5. John Elway threw double-digit picks in year 6 and year 7. Brett Favre threw more picks than anybody in the history of the game. I'm not saying that to absolve Carson Wentz. I'm just saying that to bring some actual context to it. I'm seeing that Carson is playing more of that Brett Favre gunslinger, trying to make plays, trying to create, trying to do the best he can with what he has. And sometimes there's risk, but the reward can be greater. Do you see that? Have you seen that out of him? Would you equate him more this year to playing like Brett Favre? And while that's going to drive people crazy at times, the risk is not as great as the reward in the end.
Yeah, I thought it was a great question when we were on that Zoom call. I do think gunslinger is like an interesting word. I think he's playing hero ball, right?
Like,
and with hero ball, you've got to take the good with the bad. The bad is throwing that interception down the sideline when everybody in the press box, in the stadium, knew he should have thrown it out of bounds. The play was done.
Yep.
I mean, even Hightower probably thought the play was over.
Yeah, you know what? And I don't think we asked him about that at the end. I don't remember. I thought he was trying to and just didn't get enough on it. Was he really trying to make that play? Because he can't make that play. Did he address that?
I forget. I thought he was trying to make the play.
Okay.
I mean, I don't remember if we got any final conclusion, but I definitely think he was trying to make that play.
Okay.
If you looked at his eyes.
Yeah, he can't be making that play.
Yeah, but then you get the final two drives. Look, he has made some throws over the past 2 weeks that are incredible, but like, you also take into account the first half of both games, and it's just kind of like, dude, what are you doing? So I think it's more of fine-tuning that. I think he can get by with that against the Cowboys, who are now down 22-3 against Washington.
Wow, yeah.
But once they get to the bye week, they really need to kind of sort out his mechanics, what he does well, really self-evaluate, because I think Doug Peterson needs to evaluate the way he's calling plays.
Yes. Yes.
And you know what? Frankly, Carson Wentz bailed him out on Thursday with some of these plays. Look, Doug got to call the plays, but I think Carson did some Carson things, and they just got to find a way to get in sync, because it's clear there's games where Doug's calling plays where everybody's open and Carson's missing guys, and then there are moments where Carson is just getting outside of the play and making things happen. And they just need to get on the same page, because that's what happened in 2017.
Mike K covers the Eagles for NJ.com on Twitter. Follow him at Mike_E_KKAYE. As always, man, appreciate your time. Thank you. Well done. And I'll see you in the press box this week.
Sounds good, my brother.
All right. Have a good one. That's Mike K. As always, does a great job. Check his stuff out.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.